Hashtag you don't have to be Jewish.
Tanusha Naidu, a very good morning to you. How are you doing?
Good morning, Howard. I'm well. How are you?
I am excellent. Thank you. So, wow, President Cyril Ramaphosa at the... Look, I'm impressed. What, 7 hours of testimony? He sat there. He faced it. We might not like all of his answers, but he was there.
Yeah. I mean, he availed himself to the commission.
Absolutely.
He was there in April, and he's back for his final testimony. And I don't think there's been a precedent like this before in South Africa's democratic history. And he's essentially just, you know, put himself there to say, I'll do the best that I can. We can, yeah, I think we you know, when you listen to the commentary, you listen to the post day one analysis of his appearances that he's on the commission, you kind of get the sense that it wasn't what people were expecting. There were loopholes, there were information gaps, there were issues that essentially, you know, raised questions and eyebrows about things like the deployment committee and not having minutes, challenges around whether or not the president, how much he knew and how much he didn't know. Mm. Did he genuinely did not know? Was there access to information? There's all a lot of stuff there, but I think, you know, at the end of the day, people will say, let's commend him for the fact that he put himself out there.
I think so. To me, that's a huge thing, that he's prepared to actually deal with these things. I found it quite fascinating, some of the comments that he made, specifically around the appointment of the finance minister, the firing of Nene at the time. I thought that was interesting. And why I found that interesting is that the way in which it played out, that he passed on a message to get to the president, to President Jacob Zuma, what that showed me was that there wasn't a particularly close relationship between Zuma and Ramaphosa. I don't know if that's just something that I was picking up on, or if that... It certainly gave me a sense of comfort that these two weren't in cahoots. It wasn't like he was in the office during all of this planning. What are your thoughts?
I think it's a good angle that you bring. I mean, it's an angle that I didn't come across in the analysis and in the commentaries and in the reporting. And even in the context of being on different shows yesterday, it wasn't an analysis that kind of gave us a sense that, you know, maybe the relationship wasn't one that was chummy and it was more of being cordial in a kind of distant manner. So I think when you come back to those five options we had in terms of the firing of Nandja Nene, the question was, he stayed. Because if he didn't stay, I think he makes the point in his elaboration of why he chose option five, is that if he didn't stay in the party, and I mean, if he didn't stay as deputy president of the republic, then perhaps that would have been an opening for worse things to come. Now that you mention it, it's also a possibility to raise the other side of that argument, and to say that maybe originally he was brought into the deputy presidency post, both in the party and the republic, because he kind of, in a way, gave the Zuma presidency maybe a level of credibility, a level of legitimacy. He's got this guy who's quite a savvy businessman. He's got all the right credentials. He's my deputy, and we're going forward. But I think at the end of the day, for me, it's a good point to raise. But then if you stay, you know, for me, the point is, do you stay because you think that, you know, I can stabilize what's going on, I can reform from within as opposed to being on the outside? Or is it that I have the same power within the republic and I stay because at the end of the day, I'm hoping that it's so bad that, you know, he talks about the 9 lost years in the last appearance before the Zondo Commission, and in many other platforms, he keeps referring to the 9 lost years. But in terms of whether or not he was able to turn it around, even in a slight way, I think was something that perhaps raised alarm bells in my head, because then the narrative is, did he not contradict himself in a sense to say that while staying, I thought I could change it or I could nip away at what was happening. But then did that relationship, the distant relationship between him and Zuma, just not have the traction where he could shift the issues or shift the structure a little bit? Because at the end of the day, you also run the risk of saying, well, I stayed because I wanted to do this, because it was it was a way that I thought I could shift the dynamic. But then you also become unwittingly enabling state capture.
Mm. Yeah, it's just such an interesting thing. Do you think at the end of this, if we look at sort of the credibility scale, if he came in at a 5, is he going up or is he going down?
You know, I mean, I think the problem here is that the situation is so rotten in the in government. And the situation in the party is just beyond the point of no return at times. That it comes not even from a low base. It comes from such a base in which it can't get any worse than that. So Ramaphosa does have a little bit of credibility in terms of street cred and whatever else. But he does have the ability to say he comes in at a higher rate, not maybe 5, maybe just above maybe 1 or 1.5. But at the end of the day, the problem with the credibility test is that the frustration in the body politic of the state is that you want to see something done. And I think it was also the way in which the evidence leaders were raising the questions to formulate a tapestry around which they could get the president to provide a clip that angle to say, in your capacity as deputy president in 2014 to 2017, to early 2018, is it not possible that you knew what was happening? Why couldn't you have done anything? Because you chose option 5. And at times you got the impression from the acting chief justice that he too was becoming frustrated, because he was asking questions about, you know, doesn't the deployment committee, when you have these meetings and you make these discussions and you talk about who's the person I want to appoint and the judges and whatever, you're raising a constitutional issue. You're compromising this whole notion that the ANC is impartial, or members of the ANC are impartial, going through the processes that elect these officials, whether it's the JSC, whether it's other processes for election in parliament of the Chapter 9 institution heads, etc. Because you could receive in between those spaces that the idea that the president was sticking to this, to the notion that, you know, there's a theoretical assumption he was making that the party and the state is almost not entwined too much, that there's no, that the influence is there, but it doesn't, it's not the final decision maker.
Right.
Well, not the point was being raised. The point that was being raised was that if you, Howard, come to me and very nicely, but not in a way that essentially says, oh, you've got to do it, but you tell me in a very implicit way, this is what we like. And that was the problem with the Jacob Zuma presidency. There's nothing down in paper.
Yeah,
and so the paper trail is cold. And so everybody felt this is what number one liked and played the role. And that's what I think was coming out in yesterday's testimony. And that's what the president was trying to, either he was evading or he was having selective amnesia.
Fascinating. We do need to leave it there. Sunisha Naidu, Senior Research Associate at the Institute for Global Dialogue.